This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of adult hip dysplasia from the Recon section on orthobullets.com. Hip dysplasia is a disorder of abnormal development or dislocation of the hip secondary to capsular laxity and mechanical factors. Adult and adolescent dysplasia can come in two forms: dysplasia that was previously treated, or dysplasia that was not treated, which if left untreated can progress to early arthritis. As far as the pathoanatomy of adult hip dysplasia, acetabular retroversion is the most common factor. As far as epidemiology, dysplasia is attributable to 1/3 of all cases of hip osteoarthritis. With respect to classifications to know for adult hip dysplasia, the two big ones are the Crow classification and the Hardofilakitis classification. The Crow classification is broken down into 4 grades and is based on proximal displacement as well as femoral head subluxation. Grade 1 is characterized by less than 10% of the vertical height of the pelvis with respect to proximal displacement. And as far as femoral head subluxation, there is proximal migration of the head-neck junction from the inter-teardrop line less than 50% of the femoral head vertical diameter. Grade 2 has 10 to 15% proximal displacement with 50 to 75% femoral head subluxation. Grade 3 has 15 to 20% proximal displacement with 75 to 100% femoral head subluxation. And grade 4 has greater than 20% proximal displacement and greater than 100% femoral head subluxation. The Hardofilakitis classification has 3 types: type A, or the dysplasia type, type B, or the low dislocation type, and type C, or the high dislocation type. In type A, or the dysplasia type, the femoral head is within the acetabulum despite some subluxation. There's also segmental deficiency of the superior wall and an inadequate true acetabulum depth. In the type B, or the low dislocation type, the femoral head creates a false acetabulum that is superior to the true acetabulum. There's also complete absence of the superior wall and inadequate depth of the true acetabulum. In type C, or the high dislocation type, the femoral head is completely uncovered by the true acetabulum and has migrated superiorly and posteriorly. There is a complete deficiency of the acetabulum and excessive antiversion of the true acetabulum. As far as presentation, adult hip dysplasia patients have symptoms of hip or groin pain, especially in flexion activities, and it often has an insidious onset. Physical exam may reveal increased internal rotation before arthritis sets in due to increased femoral antiversion. It may also reveal decreased internal rotation that may represent osteoarthritis. The exam may also show increased external rotation with ambulation, and patients may have a positive anterior impingement test, which is pain with passive flexion, internal rotation, and adduction. Patients may also have instability with extension, abduction, and external rotation. With respect to imaging, recommended views on radiographs include AP and lateral. Findings may include decreased femoral head sphericity, the crossover sign, which results from increased retroversion, acetabular protrusio, which is represented as a decreased lateral center edge angle of less than 20 degrees, and the lateral center edge angle is the angle between the vertical line plus the line from the femoral head to the lateral acetabulum, which is assessed on the AP view, and a normal lateral center edge angle is between 25 to 40 degrees. Radiographs may also reveal an increased tonus angle of greater than 10 degrees, which is the angle between the horizontal line plus the line along the superior acetabulum. This basically measures the inclination of the weight-bearing zone, and this is assessed on the AP view. A normal tonus angle is between 0 to 10 degrees. Other findings on radiographs for adult dysplasia may include a decreased head-neck offset ratio, which is the distance between the line parallel to the femoral neck through the anterior femoral neck, plus the anterior femoral head divided by the diameter of the femoral head. You will assess the head-neck offset ratio on the lateral view, and a normal ratio will be less than 0.15. An increased femoral neck shaft angle may also be seen on plane films in adult dysplasia patients, and this is the angle created by the anatomic axis of the femur and the femoral neck. This is typically seen in coxa valga. Finally, a decreased vertical center anterior margin angle, or the anterior center edge angle, is obtained on a false profile radiograph and is the angle between the vertical line through the center of the femoral head to the lateral acetabulum, and this basically assesses the anterior undercoverage. A CT scan might be useful in assessing structural abnormalities of the femoral head and neck. Now moving on to treatment for adult hip dysplasia. Non-operative management involves supportive measures, which is indicated as the first line of treatment. Operative options include periacetabular osteotomy, plus or minus a femoral osteotomy, a salvage pelvic osteotomy like a Chiari or shelf osteotomy, hip resurfacing, and a total hip arthroplasty. Periacetabular osteotomy plus or minus a femoral osteotomy is indicated for symptomatic dysplasia in an adolescent or adult with a concentrically reduced hip and a congruous joint with a good joint space. Advantages include that it provides hyaline cartilage coverage, the posterior column remains intact and patients can weight bear, it preserves the external rotators, and delays the need for arthroplasty. A salvage pelvic osteotomy, for example a Chiari or shelf osteotomy, is indicated for an unreduced hip and is recommended for patients with inadequate femoral head coverage and an incongruous joint, which is why it's known as a salvage procedure. Hip resurfacing is indicated for Crow type 1 or 2 disease. Total hip arthroplasty is indicated as a treatment of last resort for those with severe arthritis. This is obviously preferred treatment for older patients, that is greater than 50 years old, and those with advanced structural changes. In a patient with bilateral hip dysplasia, there are significant technical challenges that need to be addressed to ensure a successful total hip arthroplasty. Now, let's talk about some surgical techniques in more detail. A periacetabular osteotomy, such as a Gans or Bernese osteotomy, involves multiple osteotomies in the pubis, ilium, and ischium near the acetabulum. This allows improved three-dimensional correction of the acetabulum configuration. It is technically the most challenging, and the complication rate is as high as 15% even in experienced hands. Hip arthroplasty performed after a periacetabular osteotomy may lead to increased incidence of a retroverted acetabular cup. The goal of a shelf osteotomy is to cover the femoral head with fibrocartilage, not articular cartilage, and also to increase the weight-bearing surface by placing an extra-articular buttress of bone over the subluxated femoral head. The technique involves adding bone to the lateral aspect of the acetabulum, which depends on metaplastic or fibrocartilage for successful results. In a Chiari osteotomy, you will make the cut above the acetabulum to the sciatic notch and shift the ilium laterally beyond the edge of the acetabulum. And like a shelf osteotomy, this depends on metaplastic bone or fibrocartilage for successful results. As far as total hip replacement, you may need to do a trochanteric osteotomy to improve visualization in Crow type 3 or Crow type 4 patients. In a patient with bilateral hip dysplasia, there are significant technical challenges that need to be addressed to ensure a successful total hip arthroplasty. The acetabular cup is ideally placed where the center of the true acetabulum would be. Restoring the center of the hip may cause significant lengthening and require femoral shortening. A high hip center can be used when there is inadequate bone stock in the acetabulum to achieve adequate host bone coverage. In addition, a modular femoral implant may be used for a dysplastic hip with significant rotational deformity, and you can use an uncemented cup if there is less than 30% uncoverage. Now, let's finish up this review by briefly mentioning the complications. There's a 10 times increased incidence of sciatic nerve palsy in 5 to 15% of adult hip dysplasia patients undergoing a total hip replacement. Lengthening of greater than 4 centimeters can lead to sciatic nerve palsy that will present clinically as a foot drop. There's also an increased risk of hip dislocation after arthroplasty in 5 to 10% of adult hip dysplasia cases. Other complications may include periprosthetic femur fracture and infection after a total hip replacement, just like in normal primary osteoarthritis patients. Now, since this is a relatively short topic, let's do two quick review questions about adult hip dysplasia. And the first question reads, a 25-year-old female presents with complaints of persistent left hip pain. A pelvic radiograph series demonstrates a lateral center edge angle of 16 degrees, a vertical center anterior margin angle of 18 degrees, a tonus angle of 15 degrees, a neck shaft angle of 132 degrees, and a femoral alpha angle of 38 degrees. Magnetic resonance arthrogram demonstrates a degenerative superolateral labral tear with no lesions of the articular cartilage. What is the most appropriate surgical intervention for this patient? And the choices are 1, surgical hip dislocation with femoral acetabular osteoplasty and labral repair, 2, proximal femoral osteotomy, 3. Psalter innominate osteotomy. 4. Bernese periacetabular osteotomy. And 5. Total hip arthroplasty. So the patient presents with hip pain and radiographic signs of adult hip dysplasia. She would be best treated with the Bernese periacetabular osteotomy. Again, to quickly review, adult hip dysplasia is characterized by undercoverage of the femoral head, which leads to femoral acetabular pathomechanics that increase load to the superolateral acetabulum. These increased contact stresses cause degenerative labral disease, cartilage delamination, and progressive degenerative changes that lead ultimately to osteoarthritis. Early diagnosis of adult hip dysplasia in patients with maintained articular cartilage can benefit from reorienting a periacetabular osteotomy to increase acetabular coverage of the femoral head, which normalizes contact stresses and has been shown to preserve the hip. In 1988, Gans et al. First described the reorienting periacetabular osteotomy. The procedure was performed through a Smith-Peterson approach and utilized osteotomies of the ischium, pubic ramus, supraacetabular ilium, and the quadrilateral plate. They described this osteotomy as advantageous because it could be performed through a single approach and achieve large corrections in morphology, including the option of medializing or lateralizing the acetabulum. Parvizi et al. Performed a retrospective analysis of 36 hips with a diagnosis of degenerative labral tears in the setting of developmental dysplasia of the hip who underwent arthroscopic labral debridement. The authors reported that all patients had improved functional scores at 6 weeks postoperatively. However, the scores declined by 2 years postoperatively, and in many, they identified accelerated hip osteoarthritis. 16 of their patients required further open surgery, including 3 who underwent total hip arthroplasty. The authors concluded that arthroscopic labral debridement in the setting of developmental dysplasia of the hip without correction of the underlying morphological abnormalities is likely to fail. Stepaker et al. Reported a 19-year follow-up of the first 63 patients to undergo a periacetabular osteotomy. They reported that 60% of the hips remained preserved at final follow-up. For the 40% who failed, they found 6 factors that predicted a poor outcome: young age at surgery, preoperative Merle, Diabigne, and Postol score, positive anterior impingement test, a limp, osteoarthrosis grade, and postoperative extrusion index. The Merle, Diabigne, and Postol scores are validated instruments that measure pre- and postoperative pain, gait, and mobility. They concluded that periacetabular osteotomy was an effective technique for select patients with good results at 19 years after surgery. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1 is incorrect as surgical hip dislocation with femoral acetabular osteoplasty and labral repair would be indicated for patients with femoral acetabular impingement that cannot be adequately treated with arthroscopy. This patient has radiographic signs of hip dysplasia, not FAI. Answer 2 is incorrect, as a proximal femoral osteotomy would be indicated for pediatric patients with hip dysplasia manifesting with abnormal femoral neck shaft angle or neck antiversion. This patient is skeletally mature and has a normal neck shaft angle. Answer 3 is incorrect, as Salter's innominate osteotomy is a redirecting acetabular osteotomy indicated for correction of developmental hip dysplasia in skeletally immature patients with a mobile pubic symphysis. And answer 5 is incorrect, as a total hip arthroplasty would be indicated if this patient demonstrated advanced degeneration of the articular cartilage, which is not evident on MRI. And the final question reads, patients with hip dysplasia have a series of anatomic abnormalities that most commonly include which of the following? And the choices are 1, a shallow, medialized acetabulum that is deficient anteriorly and superiorly, 2, large contact area between the femoral head and acetabulum, 3, large femoral head with a long femoral neck, 4, excessive femoral neck antiversion and posterior greater trochanter, and 5, decreased neck shaft angle. So patients with developmental dysplasia of the hip share a common pattern of anatomic abnormalities, including an acetabulum that is shallow, lateralized, antiverted, and deficient anteriorly and superiorly. On the femoral side, the head is usually small, the neck is short and antiverted with a posteriorly placed trochanter, and the femoral canal is small. The neck shaft angle is typically increased. The contact area of the femoral head and acetabulum is typically decreased. But the correct answer to this question, asking about patients with hip dysplasia that have a series of anatomic abnormalities that most commonly include, and the answer is choice 4, excessive femoral neck antiversion and a posterior greater trochanter. That's all for this review about adult hip dysplasia. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.